It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
And welcome into the podcast for this Friday. Richard Skinner, Local12.com, digital sports columnist and editor, along with Chad Brendel and Rick Brewing. You heard where they're from in the open there. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to talk a little UC football and the coaching search there. We're certainly going to talk about Xavier's disappointing loss to Colorado. Big game for the Bearcats in basketball tomorrow. Is Thad Matta on fumes at Ohio State? Kentucky got back on track. And the NKU North quietly putting together a nice little non-conference run to this point. So we got a lot to go, and of course we'll have your all's final takes as well, so a lot to get to. But we'll start with football. We won't spend a lot of time because this is a basketball podcast, but it's obviously still germane. I mean, we're here Friday at roughly 10:30 in the morning. Where do we stand? Do you expect something to be even done maybe by the time the podcast is up?
It's at that point where anything could happen. I was, you know, up through yesterday, I thought it's going to Friday at least. I wouldn't expect a press conference until Monday.
Right. You're certainly not going to do anything tomorrow with a lot of the traveling party going to Indy for the basketball game.
They have graduation today.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. Sunday.
Okay, and basketball
and
in between.
And then basketball in between.
Right.
So I wouldn't expect a press conference until Monday. The way that this thing has gone, they have been incredibly silent.
Well, they've been silent since the Luke Fickell.
I mean, they've been silent before then. There hasn't been much coming from the administration.
No. But it's been really silent since the Luke Fickell name got out there, Tuesday-ish, late Monday-ish, maybe even. And it seems like since that point in time, you've heard no other candidates. You've heard no other real news, not even a trickle. And I know you've worked it really hard. And if you're not hearing much, it seems like they've gone to kind of that hibernation where they may have their guy and they just aren't ready to announce it yet officially.
Yeah, from, you know, contacts that are out there. Outside of UC, there was some word that they met with him last night. I haven't been able to confirm that on the UC side. I got silence, which I've gotten a lot of.
Sometimes the no comment silence is a great comment.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because
problem is, you can't run with the no comment silence.
If you follow me on Twitter, I've been able to shoot down all the stuff that's been false.
Right.
I didn't get shot down on that.
Right.
So I can't confirm it 100%, but I would say there's a pretty good chance they met with Luke Fickell last night. As of last night, I was told they're not in contract negotiations. They have not offered the job to anybody. But, I mean, I was told all along, end of the week, and end of the week is Friday. So I think you could see something leak out today.
Just curious, if Luke Fickell does become the head coach, what do you think he does for coordinators?
I think Kerry Combs is the defensive coordinator, obviously.
I knew you just
it was just the dig I mean, was there.
It's not even a dig.
It's not a dig.
I don't mind Kerry as a defensive coordinator.
I'm just asking questions.
Okay, this is obviously this is not a visual medium, but you asked that with an absolute smirk on your
face. Absolutely. I don't mind Kerry as defensive coordinator.
I'm not taking digs.
I think it would be a good
questions.
Okay. I think it would be a good addition.
With a smirk.
If Fickell is brought in, they know each other well. They've worked together for a long time. Fickell is a defensive guy, so I think he could handle some of the coordinator responsibilities as Kerry learns on the job.
Yeah.
I think it would be a good situation. And I think both of them, the way that they recruit in Ohio, would definitely return that focus to, you know, the state, as Mike Bone said that he wanted on Tuesday when he was on, you know, local radio a couple times.
Yep. You know what that sound is? That's the sound of a man spinning the fact that he's about to have to work with Kerry Combs next year.
Yeah, but he's going to be okay.
What have I said the whole time? I don't think he's qualified as
to be a head coach.
That is all I've said.
On Monday, you were a little more emphatic about why he should not be at UC then all of a sudden.
As head coach. I'll give him that.
You're making something up that's not there.
He did say as head coach. I'll give him that. I'm not as familiar with the Ohio State staff deep down, from running back coach to quarterback coach, all that stuff, that if there's anybody even on that staff that could come with Fickell to be offensive coordinator.
They've got a young wide receiver coach and his name is escaping my mind right now, but there's some belief that he's going to be a hot name and you might see him come with as offensive coordinator. From what I've heard, there's been a lot of jockeying for position if they do get that job, that people are wanting to come and be, you know, interested in coming and being on the staff.
Yeah.
I think they would have a lot of interest in terms of filling out their staff.
Last question to this is, obviously Ohio State is in the Final Four, playing for a national championship. What do you do with at least if it's Fickell and Kerry, and we won't even go to the offensive side if they bring an offensive assistant, what do those guys do in the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, if they're part of this staff and that staff still?
It's my understanding Urban Meyer's policy is they stay until the job is done.
And for those who don't, Tom Herman did that. Tom Herman worked both jobs, basically.
Yeah, he had like a day or two a week. He could go to Houston and work. But the thing is, Monday starts a dead period in recruiting. You can still call and communicate with recruits via
now the question is,
social media.
Would you, if you're Urban Meyer, would you allow Luke Fickell, Kerry Combs, and if there's somebody else to make calls from Columbus and on behalf of UC, or do they take their Monday, which is maybe a coach's day off, whatever that is? I'm on an NFL schedule where Tuesday's usually the day off for players. Do they drive down here and make calls from their office at UC?
I think they'd have to. Well, Herman went to Houston.
I know he did.
So I think they would just hop in the car. It's only an hour and a half away.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty simple solution. You drive 45 minutes, hour down, wherever you need to get to the 513 area code.
Correct.
You buy yourself a burner phone and you go back up to Columbus and make calls all week.
I like that. Stop at a Waffle House somewhere and make your phone calls.
Get yourself Milwaukee's best.
Absolutely.
And just
pound it in a parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only move right there.
Well, we'll find out, obviously, and it seems like it's got to be close.
Yeah, I would think it's close. The thing that's interesting is they did it a little bit different than a lot of searches have been done. From what I understood, they literally went out and interviewed or met with all 8, 10, whatever the final number was of the candidates they had.
Right.
And then they're coming back and coming to a decision on which one that they want to hire. I mean, all the smoke is behind Fickell. And if I had to handicap right now, I would say that's probably the way it's going to go. But I wouldn't
bet on the
chalk.
Bet on the chalk.
I wouldn't be shocked if something comes from out of nowhere in this thing.
Uh-oh. Like?
Well, I mean, look at Houston. The smoke was Lane Kiffin.
Oh, okay.
Lane Kiffin, and then today they hire Major Applewhite.
That's a good point.
I mean,
that's a good point.
You never know.
So it could be Luke Fickell, and they hire Kerry Combs.
I could see that.
I just had to do it.
It could happen.
All right, let's move on to some college basketball. We'll get to UC Butler, a big game for the Bearcats tomorrow, which becomes even bigger because Butler lost, if that's strange enough for you. But let's talk about Xavier from the other night, Rick, and they do play Utah tomorrow, and we'll touch on that game here in just 1 second. Uh-oh. What we got? We got Chad Brandel waving his phone at me.
Down to 2 to 3 candidates.
Okay. So that would be down to Luke Fickell and Kerry Combs.
Why did I even do that?
I know.
I
just thought I'd throw that out there.
But yeah.
Obviously,
I give a freaking update.
And we appreciate that. I do.
I haven't even put that anywhere yet.
I know that.
I just checked my phone when you yahoos.
Was there not a tee around for you to set that on? You had to soft toss it to him?
Yeah, he really did.
Underhand.
And I had the giant wiffle ball bat, and I just whanged it out of the park.
And the fat red bat on that
Exactly right. All right, let's talk about Xavier from the other night, Rick. We'll talk certainly about the Utah game tomorrow with Larry Kostowiak and the running Utes. You got another one for me?
No, I've got
He's going.
We need a football alert sound.
Yes, we do.
No, this isn't football. I've just got a disclaimer.
Yes,
I haven't watched any basketball this week.
That's all right. You'll still know enough.
Literally, it's been 15 hours.
Okay,
a day
so here's what you can do.
Search.
You can play with your phone for the next 5 or 10 minutes while we talk Xavier,
okay,
and you
good.
Can chime in and make a snide comment on something you didn't watch if you'd like.
Okay.
All right.
Good.
Xavier the other night.
Ready break.
Losers to Colorado. You take Trayvon Blewett out of the mix, and I'm not really happy with him shooting 13 threes either, but you take him out of the mix, the rest of the team 1 of 14 from three-point range. Last two games they've scored in the 60s, haven't shot the ball well. Alarming, or just this is what happens on the road?
Well, I mean, it is what happens on the road to a certain extent. It's not acceptable if you want to be what Xavier thinks
Correct.
They are
Absolutely.
At the end of the day.
Yep.
It came down to the fact that this game to me, especially after watching it again last night, like you watch it in real time, you feel a certain way, feeling, you develop certain narratives in your head, you read the message board, everyone's freaking out about certain things, so you think things happen.
Well, and it's funny, and you wonder why coaches always talk about, I need to go back and see tape. You see things in real time one way, and sometimes you go back and look and you go, okay, I didn't see that little nuance. I didn't see that miss. I didn't see that good play. That's why, looking at it again sometimes is very helpful.
The first time through, I thought, man, that was just awful offense. They didn't move the ball well, bad shot selection. They just weren't good in the second half at all. I rewatch and I go, their best players weren't good. Sometimes you got to tip your cap a little bit, though, because Colorado had scholarship players, too. And basically what this game came down to when I rewatched it is the fact that Xavier's big three, Edmund Sumner, Trayvon Blewett, and J.P. McKira, weren't nearly as good as Colorado's star players. Now, so here's the line.
So is that disappointing, then?
Yeah, it is disappointing, of course. But, I mean, here's the line from Xavier's players. If I told you their big three are going to get 45 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds, 5 steals, 3 turnovers, they shoot 36.8%, 14 of 38 combined, and 7 of 22 from 3. Obviously not great shooting percentage, but in terms of production...
Yeah, 45 points isn't...
15 points apiece, the 4 assists apiece. I mean, they played fine in terms of, like, that's not an awful performance. But then you look at what Colorado's Derek White, their point guard, Xavier Johnson, their face-up four-man wing type guy, and George King, their wing, did, and they have 57 points, 23 rebounds, 5 assists, 8 turnovers, but they shoot 58.5% from the field combined and 64, 9 of 14. From three-point range by those three guys. So if their three best players are outplaying your three best players by that much, that's where you lost the game. And those are the guys Xavier's relying on. So to me, I went back and I watched, and I looked at like the last 10 minutes where Xavier really fell apart. They missed a lot of good looks and then melted down in the final 2 minutes.
Right,
they didn't have composure in the final 2 minutes. But we talked so much about bad shot selection and bad offense. It really wasn't that bad.
Yeah, and sometimes if your shot selection's good and they don't go in, there's nothing you can do.
Right.
It's the most frustrating, helpless feeling in the world. If it's bad shots and you let them know it's bad shots and you work for a better shot, but if it's good shots and you miss, it's a helpless feeling for everybody.
And sometimes it's like, you know, people, we were talking about the ball movement. There's lack of ball movement. Well, on some of the plays that there were a lack of ball movement, it was Edmund Sumner or Malcolm Bernard on one play late in the game driving to the rim and getting fouled and then missing free throws.
Right, that didn't help either.
But I mean, if you drive to the rim and get fouled, that's ideally what you want to do at the end of the game when you're trying to keep it close and stay in the game. It's not necessarily a bad shot. It's not bad ball movement if you're getting fouled and then missing free throws. You missed free throws.
All right, now this may be a rhetorical question for you because I'm not sure you have a definitive answer. I think you probably have an opinion on this. Rasheed Gaston was killing it for a while, and then they went away from him getting touches. What happened there?
Couple things. One, Tad Boyle's a good coach.
Yeah.
He made it a lot more. Tad Boyle's a really good coach, actually. I was really pleased with what I saw from him on film and the way they adjusted. But Rasheed Gaston's also not, one, their go-to player on offense, so he's not a guy that they've been used to running their offense through. Two, he's not a guy that's necessarily prepared to be like, make himself available in that role of like, hey, give me the ball every time. I'm going to seal my man, duck in, be available every time for a pass. He's a guy that when they ran sets for him in that game, they got him the ball and he finished them. So now, do they need to get more used to that?
And that's what I, yeah.
Maybe, but that was a good matchup for him. He was playing a guy that was very similar. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a long guy. It wasn't an athletic guy. It was a guy who was 6'9", below the rim, similar to him. So it was a good matchup. I don't think that's like a big concern going forward, but better recognition maybe in the future of, hey, our big man's killing their big men. Let's get him the ball as much as possible. I think Kaiser Gates is a concern right now. I mean, he doesn't look right. He's not moving the same at all, and that's what you want Kaiser for,
right,
is his ability to move laterally. He's not doing that. He's not shooting it well. He's 3 of 14 from 3 since he returned.
0 of 4 the other night.
And really good looks, too. I mean, he's getting kick-out wide-open in-rhythm threes that he can't put down. It's tough to play him right now, to be quite honest. And they have to play him
but
or Malcolm Bernard.
But they have
Bernard.
To. Yeah,
they have to play him or Malcolm Bernard.
And Malcolm Bernard gave you nothing the other night, too.
They're both playing poorly right now.
Right.
So, I mean, that's an issue. And then, obviously, you're waiting on the whole Miles Davis thing.
Right.
And that's going to happen. And I don't think it's going to be as soon as Xavier fans want.
Because the initial thought was maybe for after first semester, right? And that's
right.
After
they were
next week's finals?
It would have been for the Wake game, basically, Wake Forest.
Yeah, okay.
I've been told he's not going to be back for Wake. I can confirm that. Now, when exactly is he going to be back? Don't have a definitive answer on that one yet. Don't know how easy that'll be to come by in the next few weeks.
Means it possibly doesn't?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I think, unless something else happens.
Well, yeah,
now and then.
Yeah.
But as of now, like,
on what's
I'd
transpired
say 100%
already.
He's coming back at this point. It's already been decided, and they know the date. We don't know the date.
Okay.
But I do know it's not going to be for the Wake Forest game. It's not going to be as soon as some Xavier fans want. I think it'll be a lot closer to getting into conference play.
One other thing from the other night, Trayvon Blewett takes 13 threes. He does make 6, so percentage-wise, that's a nice percentage. But is that way too many for him? Does he need to get to the rim more? Because he's a good foul shooter on top of it.
Well, I mean, does Trayvon need to get to the rim more? Yeah, probably. I think, one, he's thinner, he's lighter, he's better a ball handler than he's been in the past few years. So he just needs to do that more because he's developed his game to that point.
Right.
It's another weapon for him. It's something he'll use in the NBA when there's more one-on-one play where you're not getting a lot of help defense like you do in college. But at the same time, in this game, I didn't think that was a problem. He shot the ball really well. The only bad shot he took, really, were the two bad shots he took in the final 2 minutes.
Right.
Other than that, every look he took was a good one, even the ones he missed from three. So, especially when you're struggling shooting the way they were and he's hot, I think you got to get him as many three-point looks as you can.
Okay. All right, let's talk about tomorrow's game then. Utah, Larry Kostowiak and the running Utes of Utah. They do like to run it. Obviously, this game's at home. Xavier's been a very good home team. Do you anticipate them bouncing back, and what would prevent that?
What would prevent that is that Utah's a pretty good team. I mean, they're talented enough. I don't think they're great.
But they're talented enough.
But they're talented. I mean, they're sort of similar to Colorado. I don't think they're quite as good as Colorado, but they've got the requisite athleticism, size, you know, all of that type
of stuff.
They've
played a miserable schedule at this point.
And they haven't been great against it. I mean, right. they got smacked by Butler. And
barely beat Utah Valley by 7 the other night, I think.
Yeah, and I heard I don't worry too much about those ridiculous games because we see, you know, good teams all the time sleepwalk through those games. But when they played Butler and
it bugged me that you give up 80 to Utah Valley, though.
Sure. But Colorado State put 72 at home on Colorado.
That's true.
A week ago, and then Colorado turned around and beat Xavier. So the biggest thing is you just got to shoot the ball a little bit better now that you're back at home and you haven't been shooting well on the road. If they shoot well, they'll be fine. The effort's been there. The defense has been good enough. I think these next 5 games, maybe 6 games, are huge. You've got Utah at home. You got Wake Forest home. You've got Eastern Washington at home. You've got Providence at home. Then you go to Georgetown. And then you return home to St. John's, and you've basically got to win all of those games with your Xavier. You can't afford a loss in really any of those. All of these games are going to be difficult. None of them are gimmies, even though they're at home, except for Eastern Washington. So those other 4 games aren't going to be easy. And then you get into a stretch where you go at Nova, at Butler, Creighton home, Georgetown home, at UC. That's going to decide the season in a lot of ways. So you really don't want to suffer any losses between now and then.
All right. UC tomorrow plays at Butler and Hinkle Fieldhouse. And this had a chance to be a really good win if UC could go do it. It still would be a good win for sure. But if Butler had gone in undefeated, as it looked like they were going to, that would have even been better and certainly been better from an RPI perspective. But they do lose to Indiana State.
Who the hell schedules Indiana State on the road on Larry Bird's 60th birthday?
Yeah.
Bold move, Chris Holtman.
Yep.
Bold move.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well either.
I would fire whoever is scheduling. Like, not Larry Bird's 60th birthday?
Fine,
okay.
Fine. We did them a solid.
Larry Bird's 60th birthday, you go to Indiana State and lose.
Yeah.
That's a good Indiana State team.
They are solid.
Mid-major.
They're not good, but they are dangerous, and they played really well in that game.
They lost to Iowa State by 2. They lost to Stanford by 2.
I'm not sure Iowa State is
very good. They're struggling.
They're struggling right now.
They hit
a little rough patch.
Yes, they have. Sadly for UC, that win may not look as good as it does. It certainly beats the alternative, which is losing, and that's kind of tomorrow. I mean, it would be still a good win and a good RPI win because then Butler, when it hops in the Big East, obviously we've talked about once you're in the Big East for some of these schools, and especially a Butler, you're not going to hurt yourself on many nights in that league RPI-wise.
The big problem is you've got to face Butler after they just lost to Indiana State and they're returning home. Like, that's just not an ideal situation for anyone in the country.
I mean, they had to face Iowa State coming off a loss and going into Hilton Coliseum, and they were still able to get that. It's going to be a grinder.
I think Butler's a little bit better than Iowa State.
Maybe. Iowa State's more talented than Butler. Butler's probably a better basketball team, I would say.
You cringe on that, and I don't agree. Going into the year, there was not a belief this was going to be a great Butler team.
No, but I mean,
it's not an overly talented team. They play well together.
But let's pump the brakes on Iowa State. You got Monte Morris.
Deontay Burton's
pretty good. Yeah,
he's good when he's good. He's very inconsistent, and he was not very good at all against.
But I think he's on raw sheer talent.
Yeah. Okay. Slightly more talented Iowa State, but Butler after Monte Morris, Butler has like. You're in the conversation with the next 5 or 6 guys. Like, I don't think there's much of a difference.
I think it's a wide gap, but I think Iowa State's more talented than Butler. Butler's just a better basketball team. I'm not knocking how Butler plays or what they – I mean, they are fundamentally sound. They are a lot of things that Iowa State isn't.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Butler is you're not going to go in there and see them beat themselves. It gets thrown around, and it's always corny, and – I'm glad Xavier dropped the Xavier way, but the Butler way, as they call it, they kind of do. That's kind of their deal. Like it's not pretty. They don't have, you know, a bunch of highly rated kids. Really, I mean, Schrabis is a solid college big guy, a really solid good college big guy. And Keelan Martin is kind of their go-to guy now.
Keelan Martin's really, really good, and Tyler Lewis is playing like a point guard of the year type player right now. I mean, he's literally could be in conversation for the Bob Cousy Award with the way he's playing. He's not because there's a lot of really good point guards this year.
Yeah.
He struggled big time against UC last year, so it'll be interesting to see.
He struggled against everybody last year. He was literally like the worst point guard in the entire Big East and looked like a walk-on, and now he's playing like the best point guard in the conference. I mean, it's that simple. He is playing out of his mind right now. He's a totally different player, and it's a big reason why they're a lot better this year than they were last year, in addition to their defense.
So what does UC need to do to go in and beat Butler?
I mean, it's going to be another 55-54 grinded-out slugfest because both teams are really sound defensively. They're not, you know, neither are going to break down. They're going to play at a slow pace. I can't imagine, you know, seeing this game be nearly as up-tempo as the one was. I want to say up-tempo last year, but yeah. Butler played more up-tempo last year.
I think it'll be under 70 possessions.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's going to be final 5 minutes, who can get stops and who can make shots. And, you know, Butler definitely has a better perimeter shooting team. I think they're like 38% as a team from three. So
can I ask you something about that?
Yeah.
Do you see, we've seen Mick work on the man-to-man a lot recently. Well, not a lot, but more recently than I think I expected him to. Do you think we see them go a little more man instead of zone in this game? Not necessarily that it's a huge difference. I know their zone is not designed to give up three-point looks. They really extend out and pressure the ball. But just from the standpoint of, like, I think back to the Rhode Island game where we talked about they lost just communication a few times where you give up a wide-open three. Six out of Butler's seven main guys shoot the three ball well.
Yeah.
Do you think they go man a little bit more just so they don't have to worry about losing a guy?
I think Butler could shoot him out of the zone. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be worked into the game plan to where they're going to be ready to go to it at any given time. Mm-hmm. I think if you see Butler knocked down two in a row,
you're not. It'll start to freak you out a little bit.
I don't think there's going to be a long stretch where you see them stick in the zone if it's getting shot over consistently. And I think this team is pretty well suited to play man, and I think they're getting better at understanding how to play it together. So. It's going to be interesting. I mean, Butler, they got six guys, man, that really can shoot the ball. And I think all six of them are over 40%, or I think there's one that's, you know, right at it.
I mean, they're all over 35%. It's more just the fact that, look, you've got seven guys that you play mainly, and six of them are a threat to hit a three at any time. Like, not like, oh, he may step out. It's like,
yeah,
they're looking for a three.
Yeah, right. Where the rotation is to a guy where you're like, well, he's not going to shoot it. I don't have to worry about it. And the team like this, you do have to worry about all of them.
Yeah, well, yeah. And they're all confident are going to shoot any open look they get.
I think the biggest key for me in this game is going to be on the glass. I think the reason that they were able to go in and beat Iowa State is they absolutely dominated Iowa State on the backboard. Tyler Wideman and Shrabitz and the one other big that they've got whose name is escaping me, they've got some dudes that rebound there, that understand their role, that get a body on a body and fundamentally do well hitting the glass and pulling down rebounds. So I think if Cincinnati can get that, you know, I think last year they only won the glass by three. I think you need to get up in the like 7 to 10 range.
Yeah, and they out-rebounded with Iowa State by double digits, right?
Yeah, 12, I think.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the thing about that is I think that's a thing where, like, a guy like Kyle Washington, a guy like Gary Clark can get them on the offensive glass because they're not great defensive rebound. They're solid, they're fundamental, but they're not very long. They're not very athletic. I think you can get after them a little bit.
Yeah, they're just solid because they're going to get a body on you. They're going to go body to body, and they're going to box you out. Now
they will, but you play with a high motor, you got a chance.
The question is, does Kyle Washington pick up one or two silly over-the-back fouls like he's prone to do because they are so fundamental in boxing out?
Right.
He gets frustrated on the offensive glass when a guy really gets into him and he tries to come over the top to get it. So that'll be something to watch as well.
Yeah, I think against this Butler defense, one, because they're so good when they set up in the half court, you've got to try to push and transition. Any opportunities you get, you've got to go and you've got to score. Take a quick shot in transition if you get them running because it's the best look.
Well, and it's hard to box out in that circumstance too.
It is. And then two, Indiana State found success by moving the ball side to side and rotating through their offense quickly. It wasn't like, oh, we're running a lot of sets and getting a great look or anything. It was just, we'll rotate Butler enough, and then we'll go to the basket, or then we'll go one-on-one and isolate. And the thing about Butler is they're very solid fundamentally, but they don't have superior athletes or length. So once you get them moving, you get them helping and scrambling a little bit, they don't recover all that well. You do find some creases. You do find some open looks.
Indiana State straight line drove them to death.
After they rotated the ball.
That's what I'm saying.
When they get the isolation and you get the help defense out of position, Butler doesn't recover all that well because they lack a little length
and athleticism. And the help defense is really the key to them. I mean, they're one of the best.
Just like every team.
But they're one of the best help defensive teams in the country, and you're right. When you can get them moving, you know, then you can attack. And if they slow walk it up the court and stand there and you know, quietly pass it around the perimeter before 8 seconds left on the shot clock.
And then somebody has to force something.
This Butler defense will eat them up.
Yeah, yep. Because they're very solid and they're always in their gaps. But when you start getting them moving, you've got Tyler Lewis, who's really small and not athletic. You've got Keelan Martin, who's not a good defender, not athletic, not very long. You've got their big men who aren't rim protectors. Andrew Schraba is a slow and not a shot blocker.
Yeah, you better you have to slide and take a charge. And if you're not quick enough to get there, you're not quick enough to get there.
Right, so you get them moving, you've got a really good shot to score on them.
What's really interesting to me is something we've started to see them do a little bit over the past couple games. How often do we see Troy Copain posting up Tyler Lewis? Because they have been inverting the offense and using Troy and Jacob Evans to post up smaller guards.
That is smart.
It'd be a great move against Lewis if you can get the ball into him.
I mean, they did it. Tiny. You know, they did it against Bowling Green. Troy got four baskets in the first half in like a 5 minute stretch that were all.
And who are the kickout guys though?
And Evans and Kevin Johnson. And
I mean, not sure you want Troy being a kickout guy at this point.
No, no, it's a good point. Not the way he shot it.
No, I think that's a great game.
Better to put him in the post. No, that's a good call. Good call. So certainly it should be a fun game, though.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to heading up. I've never been to Hinkle.
There you go. You have not?
No, I've not.
Wow.
Oh, wow, enjoy the old
barn. And especially, you got it today game, so you get a little bit of natural light coming in, even though it'd probably be snowy and overcast.
Coolest part of the place is the lighting.
Absolutely.
Everything else about it is very
nothing. You've been for night games, too, right?
I mean, Oh, yeah.
I mean, day or night, it's great. I think day is just so much fun just because it's so different. It's
light
awesome.
Coming through the windows at the top that you're talking about, that is cool. But I just like the actual.
Oh, the lighting of the.
It almost feels like Madison Square Garden, where it's lit on the court, very well lit.
Yep.
And then
everything else
pitch
is dark.
Fall off is immediate off the court.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, it's good.
Are the sinks in the bathroom fixed? Water fountains?
Water fountain. That's the only thing that Kenny ripped apart. Yeah. I don't think he washes his hands after he pees. Kenny Freese definitely doesn't wash his hands after he pees. That's a fact.
Who paid for that?
No, I'm Tom Iser, probably.
Okay, there you go. Just making sure.
Probably took it out of Tom Iser's.
Tom Iser.
He got docked for the gangsters in the locker room incident, and they just used that to pay the
It's all on him. It's all on him.
I've abused poor Tom Iser on podcasts this year. He's going to eventually just ban
and
my media credentials.
The nicest man going.
Greatest guy in the world.
He really
Most
is.
Most mild-mannered, decent human.
Why do you have to pick on him?
I'm the worst.
Why?
No idea.
Are you that big of an ass? Are you a bigger ass than I thought you were?
With Tom Iser, a little bit. I feel bad about it now that I just
It's one thing if you pick on a guy you don't like.
If we wouldn't have gone down this far, like, into the conversation, I would have edited this whole part out because I felt bad about it.
Yeah, well, it's too late now.
Yeah, now it's in there.
It's way too late now, that's for sure. Kentucky got back on track. Really not much to talk about there. They don't really have much coming up this weekend, so we can touch on it real quick if you want.
No, not UK so much, but do one of you two have a great Billy Clyde Gillespie story now that he's retiring?
Let's see, the one where he broke Jody Meek's leg almost, or the one where he drank himself silly and tried to drive through a horse farm. Where do we want to go with this?
I should say
that sounds interesting. I don't think I've heard that one.
I should say I feel bad. He has blood pressure issues.
Yeah, it's just probably related to the alcohol issues,
I would think. And he said he's retiring from Ranger College, junior college in Texas, where he's been since Texas A&M or Texas Tech or wherever he was.
He was at Texas Tech after Kentucky.
Yeah, so he's been there since. So do you want to tell us a
story? No, he just had a few too many pops and took a wrong turn. Turned Albuquerque.
Not the greatest hire in UK history.
No, and he was, and honestly, and I was not a big fan of the hire. I'm just not a big flavor of the month guy. I just don't like it, and I thought Billy felt like a flavor of the month.
You think?
He did do some good things at A&M. I mean, I don't think anybody would discount what he did there, and it looked like, you know, there were some games. When he had that A&M team rolling defensively, they were absurdly good. And that always intrigued me because I thought, man, they just lock people. You just don't get shots against them. And it didn't matter if it was a good team, bad team, up-tempo team, slow-down team. I mean, teams just didn't get looks against them.
And then he tried to recruit Dakota Uten to UK.
Yeah, that was what it came down to. He almost decided he was going to start this. I'm going to recruit guys way ahead of time and look like I'm ahead of the curve on everybody.
And
all of them. Who was it? Was it KJ? What was the one kid? Was it KG or KJ or?
Oh, GJ Villarreal.
GJ Villarreal. Yeah, whatever became of that cat?
Nothing. The only one that I remember that ever actually like.
That was him. Villarina.
Villarina, whatever.
Whatever, yeah.
How about Casey Ross Miller? You would like I think he played for like three different schools, but you would occasionally be watching a game and they would be like Casey Ross Miller, and you're like, whoa,
yeah,
Vinny Zallo. There you go,
I think he's still on a team. Like I think Cleveland State has him on his roster right now.
I thought he went to Western for a while.
He did.
So did I. I thought he ended his career there.
So
and then
did
two
I.
years later, I saw him somewhere else, and then two more years later, he's at Xavier scrimmaging him in a secret scrimmage.
I'll be darned. Cleveland State.
Cleveland State.
Okay.
The dude's like 75 still playing power forward for somebody.
Yeah.
Vinny's mom and Frosty Tips.
The wildest thing is about Billy Clyde was once I saw Dakota Uten and G'Lon Gwynn and they both had UK offers, I was like, he's done. He's never going to last. Yeah. If those two dudes have offers from UK right now.
Yeah, he the job was way too big for him times five.
Weird time in UK history. I'm
it
sorry.
Really was. It really was. Still the best, though, is our guy Alan Cutler chasing after him. Still the best.
Billy!
You may have to drop that one in. You may have to find the YouTube clip of that, my friend.
I can do that.
Billy, don't do this to me. Billy, I can run with you all day. I can run with you all day.
Here. Billy, you're not really going to run away from me, are you?
You need to get in shape, don't you?
I can run all day with you. Your reaction, Billy?
Nope. Get him out.
Yeah, the whole story is kind of sad because I don't know if you read the whole thing where he even talked about in, I guess, his resignation letter how much he still just loves the pure coaching of basketball. And I never thought he didn't enjoy that part of it. It's just talent evaluation and running a program and running his own personal life was just an utter train wreck.
You know what, though? I just don't have any sympathy for the guy who loves coaching so much and loves developing kids and all that and yet abuses the kids. Like, sorry.
I'll give you that.
Sorry. I don't believe you. I don't trust you. Whatever you say after that point, I can't believe you really love it that much.
And by the way, as you know, they had to forfeit, I believe, all of their victories at Ranger last year.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just a little cheating.
Did you drop a Todd and Gordo sorry in there?
Sorry.
All right, let's move on to Ohio State, where they're 7-2, and on the surface it looks okay. 7-2 is not bad. One of their losses is a close one to Virginia on the road, and that's certainly not bad. They beat Providence by 5, and that's pretty good. But you look at the rest of what they've done, including the loss to Florida Atlantic on top of last year. Where's this program heading, Rick?
It's a good question. I don't think it's like, hey, they're screwed and Thad Mata can't coach anymore. I think, look, a couple years...
They still have UCLA, by the way,
yeah,
in non-league.
I used to work with a huge Ohio State fan, a guy who graduated from Ohio State, and he would ask me about the recruiting classes when I'd go on the road in the spring. And I told him right away with that 2014 class when they signed A.J. Harris to be their point guard, and it was a guy that I didn't think Xavier was after, and I didn't think it was nearly good enough for Xavier at the time.
Mid-plus.
And I was like,
mid-plus.
That's going to be a problem for them. Well, the kid ends up transferring. They have a few other kids transfer. It wasn't a very good class. I mean, to me, just looking at the roster, Chad, they have some playmakers. I mean, Jake Kwon Lau can certainly pass the ball and make plays. I just worry. I don't know. I think they have a point guard problem to an extent. Like, they just turn the ball over too damn much and don't value possessions.
The whole part, though, was and you have to wonder because Thad's obviously gone through health issues, and you just have to wonder how all that has impacted everything that's going on with him in the program.
And that's where the biggest concern comes
Correct.
In, I think, because the recruiting isn't great. It hasn't been great the last few years, and that's where you
And then you're right,
work.
As you mentioned, then you lost a chunk of last year's recruiting class.
Because they weren't good enough, quite frankly.
Yeah, well,
the
maybe,
last 2 years, you haven't recruited good enough players, so they all end up transferring, and then you look depleted. And the reason is you didn't recruit well enough. So that's the big question right now for Ohio State has Thad lost the step on the recruiting trail to where he just can't do it anymore?
Let me play the scenario out where I'm just playing it out right now that they don't go to the NCAA tournament and they become an NIT team. And in that league, it's possible. That's what you have to wonder. Is it time to move on?
You think already he's...
I mean, there's been talk for years that he's ready to go anyway.
Because of health, more than
that.
To me, I think the more likely scenario is he steps away.
Yeah,
if he has a really rough year, I think he may say, I'm just not up to it anymore, and this is going to be tough. This isn't fun. I'm doing everyone a disservice here. I'm going to step aside.
Because he's a good coach. And
great
and,
guy,
I mean,
by all accounts.
Absolutely.
He's a legend and brick breaker.
Yeah, a legendary brick breaker player, allegedly.
I don't even think
it's allegedly. I think
that's
fact.
Fact.
Everyone agrees.
I've seen him play 2-3 hours straight, stay in the same gym. Brick breaker, brick breaker, brick breaker. I mean, the guy. It's no wonder his back hurts.
He's been doing too much of that.
In all seriousness, that's not like a slight on him. He just is. He's legendary for brick breaker. I mean, I don't use that as an excuse to say like he's not doing enough recruiting because no coaches actually watch the kids they're recruiting. They're all on their phones.
That's funny. Yeah. I do want to touch on NKU as well, and they've won now 3 in a row since that loss that you were at where you drank a ton of beer at halftime against North Carolina Central. North Carolina Central team that actually played Ohio State very close in a loss.
Beat Missouri.
So it's obviously a representative team. You know, they're 6-3 now, NKU is, with the loss to North Carolina Central, blew a, what, a 17-point lead against Austin Peay, I believe, something along those lines.
In the first half.
Let's go Peay. Fly is open, let's go Peay. That's the best part.
That was a small window.
It was a window, but that's where it started. The fly is open. Let's go Peay.
That's the second time we've had that conversation
on
this podcast.
I enjoy that. That's one of my favorites. And they played Illinois tough for a half. And so the 6-3 start for them, and still non-league. They've got Southeast Missouri coming up tomorrow. They got Eastern Washington at home. No, Southeast Missouri on the road. Then Brescia, which will be an easy win. And then they do play in Morgantown against West Virginia. So that's a loss. But they have a legit chance to maybe go into non-league or go into the league something around 9-4-ish. That would be a heck of a start in the non-league.
And I'm telling you, I've been watching some of these other Horizon League teams on Synergy. NKU matches up well with them, man. They're going to surprise people in conference play. I'm telling you, Drew McDonald, we've been talking about for a while, he continues to just play tremendously. The biggest
got thing, a big game from LaVon Holland the other night.
That's what I was just going to say. The biggest thing they have now is that LaVon Holland, who's their most athletic player, their point guard, kind of the guy who can really get their offense going when they're struggling athletically, when they face more athletic teams, more athletic defenses that maybe Drew is struggling to finish against or whatever. Holland can get in the lane and make plays against those teams. And now that he's starting to hit that stride, that's a great sign for their offense.
You know, I mean, you look at the roster and, no, they don't have a bunch of 6'9 guys across the front line, but they've got enough length probably and at least enough girth, for lack of enough strength inside for that league. You've got a couple of shooters now. You got LaVon Holland who can create. You can go 9-10 deep maybe. I mean, they have a lot of good parts moving forward.
Last year it was still when you looked at
them.
They're really young.
Young.
Last year when you looked at them, they still looked like that's not a Division I team, not one that's going to be competitive. It looks like young guys out there, guys who aren't athletic enough, whatever. Now all of a sudden, you add Carson Williams next to Drew McDonald. Right. Those who don't know Carson Williams, extremely athletic freshman forward.
Mr. Like Basketball in Kentucky, which doesn't mean what it used to mean, but it's still Mr. Basketball in Kentucky.
Yeah. Beat out Xavier's Quentin Gooden for that award. And he hasn't been great, but in terms of just giving them that requisite size and athleticism at the D1 level, he gives you that. And then you add
a lot of grit.
You add like a
Coach's
Jeff
son.
Garrett
Coach's son.
At the three, who's long and athletic.
Good IQ.
Yeah. I like what the direction
he's
they're
very heading. Serious about his NKU talk.
Oh no, I like it. I'm glad. I'm really glad for that.
No,
though.
I mean,
because it's impressive to watch.
No, the white euphemisms just aren't good for Carson Williams because he's one of the few white guys that doesn't live up to any of those things.
Yeah, he's deceptive.
He's
athletic.
So wait a minute. No, he's not. He's a freak.
So he doesn't have high IQ.
It's an okay IQ. His feel isn't very good. His skill isn't very good.
He's not a coach's son.
He's not a coach's son. He's more of just an athletic freak.
There you go.
That happens to be white and undersized.
There you go.
He's not gritty.
Yeah,
he's gritty.
I'd go gritty.
Actually, I'd say that's the whitest thing about him is grit. Toughness.
No question. All right, fellas, here we go. Final take time. Chad Brendel's been on the UC football beat all week, but you always have something that's on your mind that you just got to get off your chest. It might even be the fact you hate Rick right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate him.
Blocked him on Twitter.
I did.
Tried to block me. He was going to block me.
I think he blocked you.
No, he didn't. He threatened me.
Okay.
He threatened me.
I blocked Rick and Snow.
For the record, that's helped my timeline out. That's made my timeline in better by getting blocked. So I don't see what he's tweeting now. It's called improving. It's called thank you.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to feel bad about not reading your crap.
Have you reinstated both?
I did. It was just a brief.
Okay.
You know, shot across.
Timeout.
Like a timeout. Yeah.
A lack of mental toughness. He couldn't stop reading what me and Snow were tweeting.
This is really hard because it worked a couple weeks ago, and I was fully intent on coming in and giving Butler my team of the week.
Yeah. Well, it didn't work out so good.
But
wait a bit. Yes, it did. Iowa State. UC beat Iowa State when you made Iowa State team of the week.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but I had a great case for Iowa State being my team of the week at the time. Now, Butler.
What do you need a case for? You were just trying to get some reverse.
That's a good point, and I will say. I mean, I'm going to give Butler
my
team of the week.
Butler's really good. They're really good.
Tyler Lewis, player of the week.
Tyler Lewis, player of the week, and they were looking to test their toughness,
right?
So they scheduled a game at Indiana State
on Larry Legend's
60th birthday, and that's something like that.
That can propel you
to an incredible season. I'm going to go with Tyler Lewis and Tyler Weidman and Keelan Martin and the guy that spells his name with 46 letters and pronounces it Travis.
That has zero vowels in it, I believe.
Just a little pro tip on this one. What you do before the game is you highlight and copy it, and then when you go to tweet his name every time, you just paste it in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's
better
a good pro tip.
I used to have a hard time with Krzyzewski, and then I learned a little method to that.
Coach K?
No. You got to spell it out.
You do?
Yeah, you do have to spell it out.
No, you don't.
Coach K. You can say Coach K, but you have to spell it out.
Okay. If you say so. Okay.
Krzyzewski.
Coach Krzyzewski. All right, how about you, Rick Boring?
Can I do two things, please? I want to do this mainly for you
because
I want to hear you go off on Lorenzo Romar.
He did ask, please. Oh, I may be in that camp. Yeah, yes,
I don't really.
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I don't really want to talk.
Permission granted.
But you two will get fired up.
I watched the first half of the Gonzaga game.
I did actually watch the first half of the Gonzaga game.
Okay, so for those
it's the only
you,
basketball I've watched this week.
And then you watch some really bad basketball on one side of the equation,
yeah.
Brother. Go ahead.
For those of you who don't know, Gonzaga embarrassed Washington Wednesday night 98-71 in front of a nationally televised
audience.
It wasn't that close. Exactly. Exactly right. What do you do with Lorenzo Romar, assuming they continue to suck, they continue to be completely
awful?
How is
he still there?
How can you fire him?
I'll tell you exactly why. Because he's only making $1.7 million a year. He signed a 10-year extension in 2010. He's getting that 2010 money right now, Skinny. Not to mention that, he's bringing in first-round picks every single year.
He's going to have the number one pick in the draft, and maybe next year the number one pick in the draft.
And got housed by 26.
And so you have Michael Porter Jr. coming in next year.
Yeah, you do.
He's going to be a top-five player in the class. His dad's on the staff right now.
He's got a younger brother that's coming in another season.
You're only making $1.7 million per year. The buyout is $3.2 million. What do you do with Lorenzo Romar, even if they're as bad as we? I mean, even if they're worse than LSU last year, with Mark.
They look like they are.
What do you do with Lorenzo Romar?
It's amazing how poorly they're coached.
I guess I'd have to look at this, and I honestly, I'm in the dark on this. I'd have to look at what their attendance is like. If people are still going to games and still paying money to go to games, then I guess as an athletic director, I'm okay with it.
And I think that's relevant.
I'd have to look. I honestly don't know.
I think that's relevant because Washington is right now a national brand that people care about,
yes.
That they talk about. And before Lorenzo Romar, they were not.
No,
they'd gone through pockets.
I mean, in the 80s, they were really good. I mean, there were different pockets.
I know,
but
they had 50 years where they made like two Sweet 16s, and then he made two of them back to back after he took over.
Yeah, and that's when he got, you know, that's the 10-year deal. Right. And, you know, it's such a tough call because, I mean,
dude has not been to the tournament since 2010, 2011.
I know. He made back to back Sweet 16s, right?
Yeah.
That's when he got the extension, I believe.
No, he went Sweet 16, then third round. I guess they must have been. They were playing the first four that year, I believe.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
So they won three games.
They won two games to get to the third round. So, yeah. Okay.
I mean, on principle, you should fire him.
Did go to the NIT semifinals, though.
Final four.
Here's the thing. If you could somehow get his talent to stay there and let someone else coach him,
yeah.
Great shape. If he could be a GM.
They had two first-round picks last year and stunk.
19-15.
In fairness, I will say that one's a little weird because the fact that both guys were such big surprises and honestly weren't even that good. Like Marquise Chriss did not put up numbers.
Sickly talented.
Super talented, but not necessarily ready.
He had a terrible coach.
Well, that's fair.
It's being established right now.
The other side of this is Lorenzo Romar doesn't hold his guys accountable, but he does let a first round talent go out and do his thing.
That's brilliant.
And then they get drafted. So that helps him with recruiting. There's no question about it. I mean, you can't say that style of coaching doesn't help him with recruits. The problem
is
when you don't ever win doing it, how do the recruits keep falling for it?
Rick, close your eyes. Vision Markelle Fultz in the Xavier jersey.
I don't know if he'd get enough shots with JP going 2-for-16.
Yeah, it's a good point. JP would have to move the ball a little bit more, don't you think?
Just saying.
No, it's good. I'm glad you brought up Lorenzo Romar because that was just an utter train wreck the other night.
And it sucks because Markelle Fultz is so good.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Incredible.
Defensively, they couldn't have stopped a good high school team. And they didn't have any want to stop anybody.
But if you remember what I said on Monday, Gonzaga's really good.
They are good. I'm not discounting that fact.
And Washington's really bad.
Did you see Rob Doster from NBC?
I know. Yeah,
Sports talking. He had a quote from a coach that had played Washington this year that said, "They're so effing bad on defense, it's like they've never been coached." Another coach said that.
Really? Yeah, that's awesome. And that's not shocking either. All right, you got one of the. You said you wanted two.
Not great. My Bobby Hurley hit my biggest pet peeve from coaches this.
Oh, here we go.
Slap the floor.
What?
Did he slap the floor?
Well, that's probably my second biggest pet peeve.
All right, sorry.
That's a Wojo thing. He got all mad because his team played like crap.
Played like garbage.
Yeah.
Hot garbage.
And they've
again.
Done that, they've done that more than once this
again.
Year.
Again. Again.
And so he undresses them and throws them all under the bus and reminds everyone that his teams have never had that identity. It's not a reflection of him, so he needs to figure something else out. And basically says it's all on the players. But more importantly, that's not my biggest pet peeve. Here is my biggest pet peeve, this part of his quote. Did my play? This was the Coaches versus Cancer or something. They had some type of cancer benefit going on. Did my players?
It was a Jimmy V game, I think.
Jimmy,
right?
Yeah, that's what it was.
At Madison Square Garden.
Did my players play as hard as the people that are going through what they go through in cancer, as families go through in their personal situations? I don't think so.
Wait a minute. Whoa. He equated it to people going through cancer? I didn't see the part of the quote. I'm sorry, but
my school's discovering polio vaccines. Like, what the? Quit coaches. Quit comparing college basketball games to real life terminal illnesses and acting like there's some type of link between them or your player, your team not boxing out or not guarding ball screens well enough today did not mean they weren't living up to the expectations of people fighting for cancer. What the hell does that even mean? That's so stupid. Quit doing it so that you'll go viral on social media.
I mean, there's a chance that somebody on that team could have had polio, but they don't because
they
somebody
got shot
in Cincinnati created the vaccine.
Correct.
It's a valid point.
Correct. And there could be somebody in their family fighting cancer.
Got nothing to say. Got nothing to add to that.
I did like you getting fired up about it, though.
I hate it. I hate it so much when coaches do that.
They were really good against
it's
Purdue.
So stupid.
They were really good. Played hard. Fought through it. Really good team.
They let down people with cancer. That's the biggest issue.
I mean,
wow.
All the
it's
people
not with, something you want to – like, you don't want that on your resume.
No,
I am firmly against cancer. I do not like cancer.
Yeah, I'm firmly against
it. I support cancer. You can't go out and play like Iowa State.
You can't be against it and support it.
I mean,
you support cancer research. You support cancer research. You don't support cancer.
I support people with cancer.
Okay.
I'm against cancer. I'm firmly against cancer. I have a hard line stance.
So you're anti-cancer.
Hard line stance, anti-cancer.
You might be one of the five people in the country that are anti-cancer.
I'm more against cancer than anyone, any NCAA coach in the world, and I wish all of their players would live up to expectations of people with cancer.
There you go.
And other terminal illnesses.
And hope that they don't get polio.
Yeah, and I
they won't because you see help.
Thank God for Mick Cronin's university developing a polio vaccine.
Dr. Salk.
You ever met Dr. Salk?
Harry Giles is returning on December 19th.
He is.
After we talked about
that. Yes, he is. We will talk about that on Monday, okay?
All right, sounds good.
How about we do that? All right. Have yourselves a good weekend, boys. Hopefully we'll even talk a little UC football again on Monday if they ever name a new coach.
You know where we're going?
Where are we going?
Cuban Pete's.
Yes.
Cuban Pete's.
Yes, Cuban Pete.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you. Thanks for joining us on the podcast here on Local12.com, BearcatJournal.com, and Musketeer.
And check out your new podcast.
Oh, that's right. The Two Angry Guys podcast.
It was excellent.
Was it? Thank you. We had a good time.
You really like it. Gamble really likes his egg rolls.
I'm gonna give you guys, hang on.
You got a Speedway discount in your pocket?
Nope, even better. Even better, Ricky. There it is for later today.
Nice.
Speedway gift card.
Wait, is that
I do have to get
gas? Is it gas only?
No, no.
Now you're going to pop on the way out.
Get a pop on the way out and get me some gas and get me an egg roll.
There you go.
It's all good. All right, have yourselves a good weekend. We'll see you.